It's time for JT the Brick.
Reset the show. This is the home of the Raider Nation, where Raider fans have a voice on this. I love putting fans on the radio. I love hearing emotion. I love hearing passion. I love hearing people, if they're critical or they're happy, whatever there is, I like to hear people to know I'm on the radio, not guests if they're listening and wondering if they're out there. And hopefully I bring that to the radio show. Fandom, fandemonium, getting people excited about sports.
JT the Brick.
I care about going to games and winning games. That is it. I like to pause, have a sip of water, and talk to a Raider fan, either in a chat or over the phones, who has something smarter to say than I do, which many do. More knowledgeable fans than me, I admit that. More passionate fans than me? Yeah, there's a number of them. But I'm the gateway to getting everybody in here to let it rip. There's never an off season in the Raider Nation. Got it? That's the show.
And now,
Fandemonium.
Here's JT the Brick.
Out of the gate, JT with you. Good day today to be on the radio, man. We got another big weekend, fight weekend. Canelo's fighting, and I'll be at the fight coming up Saturday at T-Mobile Arena. Excited about that. We'll have Al Bernstein, one of the great broadcasters that I've ever met. Al's a friend of the show. We've had Al on for decades. Al Bernstein, man, just to hear his voice will just ease us all. We'll hear his voice and we'll just be better off for it today. He joins us in 15 minutes previewing the fight. He has a big fight coming up after that with The Zone. He'll preview that also. So Al Bernstein coming up in 15 minutes as we open up the broadcast. Also, Levi Edwards will join us inside the Raiders. He knows more about the draft prospects and players now than I do, because he's in the building interviewing all these guys, especially the undrafted guys who got signed. So Levi will join us. The longest tenured Raider insider that I'm aware of, Bill Williamson, at 12:45. Bill will join us. And we'll talk to him about what he thought the draft was. I have Bill on. He's one of our, we got 8 or 9 insiders that we rotate. Bill's on because I've known him the longest. And I'm telling you, he's not on. At times, he is very unapologetic. If he doesn't like what the Raiders does, he tells us. Bill will join us here in about 40 minutes. And then Howard Balzer, the NFL insider, Hall of Fame voter, on what happened in the draft, too. So I'm still in draft mode. We had a busy week last week. A week ago today, I was anchoring the draft coverage with Eric Allen at team headquarters. We took Brock Bowers a week ago today. How about that? A week ago. Then Friday, we had the party at the Omnia Thursday night. Then Friday, we did it all over again. So it's been a long week. There's a lot going on here. We had the Fred Biletnikoff Hall of Fame Golf Classic on Monday, which I attended, which I'm better off of that. That was great. And now I have I don't have any anxiety in my life. I got a great wife, great kids, everyone's healthy. But I do have a lot of angst and anxiety in sports. As a Knicks fan, I'm expecting the worst tonight in Philadelphia. The Golden Knights, oh my God, don't tell me the Golden Knights are going to screw this up. I'm the only guy who talks Golden Knights in the whole city at noon. I mean, if they go away, who the hell is going to do what I do? I mean, I know we got a flagship station. I know we got other stations, but I don't know anybody on the radio at noon in one of the best cities in the world talking hockey, and we got the Stanley Cup champs, and I got to get that going. I feel like I'm on a deserted island when I mention hockey here sometimes on the show. We give you the coach, we give you the players, we give you the insiders, and barely anybody seems like they can move the needle with hockey other than me. Let's go. It's back up against the wall time for VGK, and it doesn't look good. They've lost 3 games in a row as the Stanley Cup champs. Are you kidding me? And their goaltending has been pretty decent overall. Pretty good goaltending overall, even though they made the switch. But a bunch of offensemen have gone to sleep. And that's the problem with this team. It's feast or fathom. And we're looking at it now, and they cannot get anything going. They can't score goals. They can't get their goal scorers to wake up, and they're in deep trouble. I'm confident they'll win at home because I can't predict that they're going to lose four in a row. The team's too good. The team's too good, but they're playing a better team that they had left for dead, and they let them back into the series. And that's a big part of sports. It could be a football game, a playoff game. I mean, look at the Chiefs do to the Niners every time they play them. Every time they play them in the Super Bowl, they're up in the fourth quarter by 10 and they can't close the game out. And Vegas can't close out Dallas. So I'm very concerned about this. There's some good news and bad news. The bad news first is that Vegas is on the verge of elimination and they don't look to be the better team. The good news is they should win at home in the Fortress in Vegas coming up here on Friday. And then if they win that game, they have so much more experience. So much more It's ridiculous in Dallas that maybe that experience prevails in a game seven. I don't know. I'm reaching hard. But if they don't end up winning, we don't have any hockey in May and June. And that would suck. Because I like to know, I like to be able to go and go, hey, my credentials waiting for me. I'm going to go up and see Tommy Ippolito at Hyde. I'm going to go roll around and see some friends and go see some hockey. And then afterwards have a cocktail on a Thursday, Friday night and get ready for another Golden Knights game. If you take that from me, you are taking away a passion of mine, part of my social calendar in the month of May and June. And that would stink. Because as much as we think this is a sports town, it's more of an entertainment in sports town. Let me repeat that. We got the Raiders. We got UFC. We got Canelo. We got sports. We do. We're much more entertainment than sports. Okay? Every great artist in the world seems to have a residency here. So I can fill those voids with the Rolling Stones on May 11th at Allegiant Stadium, but I want to go to a hockey game the next night or the night before. Come on, Golden Knights. Wake the hell up and let's get going here. It was a 2-2 game, Bobby. Let's get to the Robertson goal where this guy just had too much space. He's the best sharpshooter on Dallas, and he ended up putting the game away.
Top Heiskanen to the right. Robertson, top of the circle. Delays to the slot. He shoots. Blocked. Another try. He scores! Robertson gets his own rebound and puts Dallas on top 3-2 with a power play goal.
Vegas looks slow. They look tired. They're not getting to the puck quick enough. They're not dumping it in and chasing. They're just not. There too many penalties last night. Too many opportunities where they killed off penalties, actually. But they just didn't have it. They didn't have the juice. They haven't had the juice. Cassidy's been saying it. The head coach for a while, he's trying to get them going. I don't blame this on the coach. All these games are really, really tight. But Vegas could not get back into the game. Here's the final call.
Watt cuts in, going right circle. Watt looking back to the middle. A shot from Theodore over the net. And the clock runs out. The Stars win. Three wins in a row for the Dallas Stars to take a 3-2 series lead in the best of seven first round. Trailed 1-0 today. Come from behind and win it 3-2.
So it's Dan Duva on the call here. Part of my legacy at some point in my career, I don't care about my legacy now, but somewhere down the road, I want to be able to tell my grandkids, if I'm fortunate to have them, that my legacy in Vegas is I talk sports. That's it. I'm saying I do it better than anybody or worse. I just talk sports. This town needs to talk hockey more. This town has been a failure other than our flagship station across the hall of talking hockey. This ain't no Detroit, Boston, Philadelphia, Vancouver. I can tell you that. And I think we need to step our game up like Tampa Bay and some of these hockey outposts in other markets here. Today is a hockey day. Tomorrow, I'm live from Grimaldi's, best pizza I ever had, Boca Park, noon to 2. I kind of want to turn it into a hockey pep rally. We got some Grimaldi's gift cards to give away. I want to get some people in there to talk hockey and kind of act like and pretend that we're a hockey town. I hope we can do that. And let's wake this city up here. If you're a Vegas Golden Knight fan, what do they need to do to stave off elimination? We only use that word in sports. Stave off elimination. Vegas is up against the wall. An elimination game coming up Friday night. This city's got to get up for it. I got too many friends and too many other people who are just throwing in the towel. How dare you throw in the towel? This team won a Stanley Cup in their first 6 years. You don't understand. Look at what's going on in Toronto and other major markets that can't win. Got to win the next game. We'll win the next game. And then we'll have a couple of days to prepare for game seven and put the pressure on Dallas. Put the pressure on Dallas. Let's go, VGK. Let's get going today. 702-365-9200 as we open up the show here and get it rolling. So once again, I'm fighting on the internet with Charger fans. There we go. That's another legacy play of mine. I'm fighting with Charger fans who believe they're the second best team in the AFC West. I hope I get a call here in the first hour in between our two guests from someone who can put the Charger fans in place. Man, they're chirping again. Oh, they're chirping again. They got a head coach who lives in a Winnebago on the beach in Huntington Beach, and everybody acts like they're going to the Super Bowl. No, Jim Harbaugh was able to take his team to a national championship in college. He is not coaching college anymore. Okay, he's a very good coach. I think he's an elite coach, but he doesn't have an elite roster. And people are starting to think that Harbaugh is more important than the roster. I think that's the big takeaway. We got a brand new head coach in Antonio Pierce. He's pretty good. I mean, I think he's a good X's and O's guy. He stays out of the offense, but he tells the coaches what he wants the offensive goals to be. And he's ferocious on defense as a former Super Bowl linebacker for the New York Giants. And he knows how to motivate. And he knows how to motivate and have him coming out of the locker room pretty aggressive. I like that in this head coach. I like a rah-rah head coach. I like a coach that could get in a player's face and motivate him on game day. Because what the hell they do the rest of the week? They practice. They go to bed. They eat good. They watch film. They lift weights. They work out in shorts. They don't have many padded practices. You better believe we better have a guy 5 minutes before the game starts screaming in their face on the sideline saying, let's go. We got that guy. But now it's time once again for us to calm down the Charger fans and the Denver fans. They all assume that Sean Payton with a Super Bowl win, very good coach, and Jim Harbaugh with a Super Bowl appearance, he lost with the 49ers, are a significant upgrade than Antonio Pierce. They do. Look at my Twitter. Everybody's mocking Aiden O'Connell and Antonio Pierce and moving the Chargers up and the Broncos over the Raiders. The Denver Broncos have never beat the Las Vegas Raiders. Can someone make a t-shirt for me? I'll pay for it. I'll buy like 24. And then if they're good, I'll buy more. Can someone make a t-shirt factory? Make me a shirt that says, the Denver Broncos have never beat the Las Vegas Raiders. We're 8-0 against them. Okay, we fired two of their coaches. And they're walking around with beer muscles because they got Bo Nix. Come on. Bo Nix? No one wanted Bo Nix. Raiders didn't want Bo Nix. No one wanted Bo Nix. We got a much better player than Bo Nix. Much better. Doesn't play quarterback, but Brock Bowers is a much better player than Bo Nix. Ask Bo Nix. He'll tell you. Because he lost to him at Georgia when he played for Auburn, and we know that how great Georgia's been as of late. And then here we go again with the Chargers. Oh, my God. The Chargers got like 35 fans, and the Clippers got 18. If you combined all the Charger fans in Southern California and all the Clipper fans, you can fit them in my pool. I could cook for all of them. My wife could bring out pasta salad. I could get one keg, and they wouldn't drink it at all. Okay, so that's the combination of the Charger fans and the Clipper fans in the number two media market. They don't exist. They're like ghosts. And we know what happens with the Chargers. They have that lady, that fan who puts on a Viking jersey in Minneapolis and a Charger jersey. Then she gets all wacko to get on TV. Give me a break. We got the black hole. We have football's most notorious fans. Give me a break here. I'm sitting here fighting with Charger fans. Last time the Raiders played the Chargers, they put up a franchise record, 63 points. And they lost Austin Eckler, Mike Williams, and Keenan Allen. They got some good players. Joe Walt's a great player. Great player. But overall, I don't think we have to worry about these teams. I'll say this now, and you can clip it and put it on another show. The Las Vegas Raiders need to win 3 out of 4 games combined against the Chargers and Denver. That will be 3. 3 out of their 17 games. If you can give me one more year, I won't get greedy, one more year of a sweep against Denver and a split with the Chargers, because the Chargers are good. I'm not going to sit here and say Raiders are going to sweep the Chargers. I don't know what the Chargers look like yet. They're a good team. If we, the season ticket holders, can win 3 out of 4 of those games, we'll only need to win 7 more total games to make the playoffs. Does that make sense? And that includes maybe splitting with Kansas City. And then going through the schedule, which I don't think is really brutal, and I think the Raiders could get there. The Raiders will not make the playoffs if they split with Denver, split with the Chargers, and God forbid can't beat Kansas City. They won't make the playoffs. So that's how important this is coming up. So we got a lot to talk about here as the Charger fans are chirping. They are chirping as we speak. And it doesn't drive me crazy. But what it does is it bothers me because they all have short memories. Chargers have never won anything. They've never won anything. I was with Charlie Joyner, one of their greatest players of all time. He's hanging out with Fred Biletnikoff. And, you know, Charlie Joyner's a friend and a great player. Man, the amount of respect I have for him is incredible. But again, give me a break with the Chargers. And Denver's a mess. Denver's in a full rebuild. They are on a full rebuild. So again, I'll be the gatekeeper. I'll be the dragon in Game of Thrones trying to mow down these Charger fans when they start chirping about how good they are. Let's see how good they are when they play here at Allegiant Stadium. And again, I know the Raiders are better because of Christian Wilkins. and Brock Bowers. Let me just stop at those two. Also, Gardner Minshew makes the Raiders better. Even if he starts or is a backup, he makes the Raiders better. He's the best. He'd be the best backup in football if he doesn't start. I'll get back to that in a second. Canelo, Munguia coming up here. What a fight. I love, I've been to pretty much every Canelo fight in Las Vegas. Al Bernstein is back later in the month on the call on DAZN, and he's kind enough to join us to preview this fight and talk about his singing career, too. Good to hear from you, my friend Al. How are you?
KT, it's good to talk to you. How you doing?
I could not be better. I saw some tweets of yours and checked out some research here that you're excited with DAZN to be back. Let's talk about the fight you have upcoming before we get to Canelo.
Yeah, I am going to be starting with the big-time Fights USA series on DAZN. And the first one I'm going to be participating in is May 23rd, Jermaine Franklin taking on Devin Vargas. It's a series that has some contenders, and they're going to in the future have some title matches, and also they're very developmental, like Showbox on Showtime. So was. And in fact, Raul Marquez, the great former champion and my friend and former cohort at Showtime, will be part of the broadcast team with me. So I'm looking forward to it.
You know, last week, you know, we were talking about Hagler Hearns, and you retweeted and commented on what I said. You being on the call for that fight, as a legendary broadcaster, as a Hall of Famer, not every fight is going to be Hagler Hearns. It's just not. And you've called the biggest fights of all time. You treat everyone like it's your last one. So how do you get your mindset for every fight, no matter if it's on the other side of the world or in Las Vegas, and treat it just like the greatest fight you've ever called?
You know, that's a really good question. And to me, the answer is kind of simple to it. Both fighters who are in a match deserve the same kind of appropriate attention. Of course, you're not going to be using the same kind of superlatives, but in terms of information about those fighters, what their future looks like, how they're doing in that fight, all of those things, each one of those fights deserves the exact same attention. And I know you feel that way as a broadcaster, and you've been involved in many remotes for football games. And I don't care if somebody had me doing a high school football game. Those two teams would deserve, wouldn't they, the exact same attention if I was doing a college game. And I did a lot of college basketball for ESPN. And at that time, I actually did do a couple of high school games for a local thing. And to me, it was the same.
It's a perfect answer for all young broadcasters. Al Bernstein joins us, the Hall of Famer. Al, before we get to Canelo, the Garcia-Haney fight, I didn't think Garcia would, A, pull it off, because I thought he was mentally unstable. I really was worried, and you've done a lot of pre-boxing interviews before you called fights, and you've seen some guys look like they're a little bit off. I cannot believe what he was able to pull off in that fight against Haney, but your opinion on him being 3 pounds overweight, that's a big deal considering the hydration after he was 3 pounds over. Do you think that made the big difference in the fight?
Well, and now we're finding out he tested positive for
PEDs,
performance-enhancing drugs. That's come out yesterday and today. So in addition to the overweight issue, there's this latest thing to be considered. He is denying it, but there were two tests that turned up with traces of this drug in it. I can't remember the name of it. It's just with an O, but it's been used before as a performance-enhancing drug. So you got two things going on here. You know, one, the overweight issue, and I do believe that could be beneficial, of course. Mm-hmm. And then now, even more important, this fight has, you know, it just figures, right? Like when I saw that they ended up with a positive test, it was almost like, of course, right? What else would happen? It was just one of those fights there where nothing about that, to be honest, from my standpoint, nothing about that match was wonderful, in my opinion. Garcia did produce a very good performance. Mm-hmm. There's no question about that, and that's a fact. But when you muddy it up with all these other things, it takes the shine away, and it doesn't enhance. Listen, boxing's having a great time right now. Mm-hmm. That particular one wasn't its best moment.
The great Al Bernstein joins us. So for Canelo, What I love about this fight is I don't like fake hype. I don't. But Oscar De La Hoya was forced to talk and protect his name about his low moments, going to rehab, his personal issues, because Canelo's been calling him out. De La Hoya said he made Canelo's career as a promoter. A lot of that is true, but Canelo fought the fights and won the fight, so I give Canelo the edge over that. What are you sensing here with the bad blood coming in, not between the fighters, but between Canelo, Saul Alvarez, and Oscar De La Hoya?
Well, you kind of hit your head on it, or your point, you hit it on the head. Phony hype is phony hype, and it gets boring and old to me. Sometimes, and I don't even mind if there's no hype. I don't care if nobody's mad at each other before a great fight, as long as it's a great fight. But in this instance, I think there's genuine animosity between the two men for a variety of reasons, and you touched on some of those reasons. They ended up with an acrimonious split, and it's not a great situation. In some sense, since Munguia and Canelo are not going to have that kind of engagement, this probably serves their purpose in terms of creating a little extra buzz around the fight.
So tell us about the opponent here, Munguia, and what he brings to the table, the youth, the power. What should Canelo be concerned about as an aging fighter who likes to mix it up and likes to entertain? I like Canelo fights, all the ones I go to, because I think he understands the audience, the pay-per-view, the size of it, and always tries to put on a big show.
Well, he does within limits of how much he's going to give you offensively. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he does, sometimes he's going to be a counterpuncher to the point where it's up to the other fighter almost to make it happen, but then he takes advantage of it. Here's the thing. Munguia is he throws 70 to 80 punches per round, much more than Canelo will. He's a volume fighter, very offensive-minded, has defensive liabilities. Those are the ones that, of course, Canelo would like to take advantage of. Alvarez is a very good counterpuncher. He's probably the most powerful fighter Munguia has faced ever. And the thing about this fight is that Canelo Alvarez is almost impossible to hurt, you know. And Munguia is a good puncher, but he's not a 168. He's not the most dynamic one punch guy. His hope of getting Canelo and stopping him would be later in the fight. Mm-hmm. Canelo has had fatigue issues sometimes later in fights. We've seen it on several different occasions. That would be his hope to try and get a stoppage, but. And then the other issue for Munguia is when you go the distance with Canelo Alvarez, you kind of feel sometimes that you're a point or two behind once it starts. So you're hoping that you get the benefit of the doubt on that one. But it's going to be interesting.
Tell us about your performances and what you've been doing. I know from the Tuscany, other performances that you have a passion outside of boxing with entertainment. What's new coming up here? Fill us in.
Well, John Katsimides alluded to it in the article he did today in the RJ. I'm probably going to be back in June to Tuscany. I don't have it confirmed yet, but probably in the middle of June. And, you know, I try to time them before big fights, or I did one before the draft was here in town just that week, and that was fun because a lot of the football people came out, and I just try and tie them to sporting events because I think it adds a little extra fun to it. Mm-hmm. And then we do some trivia in addition to the music. I'll do some sports trivia and give a few prizes away like I used to do in the old days with the boxing party and sports party shows. And I'm enjoying doing it. You know, I found a very good home at the Tuscany where they have a wonderful performing room there, the Piazza Lounge. It's a great room for sound and for everything, and it's cozy, and the place where, you know, a couple hundred people can really enjoy your music. And to be honest with you, it's just an enjoyable experience for me, and I think people get a kick out of it because they're seeing me do something different.
Awesome, Al. Hope to have you in studio soon before your next big call. Thanks a lot for doing this today. I always appreciate our friendship.
Bye-bye.
All right, Al Bernstein starting us off. Canelo Munguia coming up. I'll be there Saturday night. I'm excited. You know, I get a credential. How lucky am I to get to go to boxing? I was saying it the other day. I mean, it's maybe the biggest perk I have other than the Raiders, a huge perk. is getting a credential for the Golden Knights and getting a credential for UFC, whatever it is. But there's still nothing like walking into a fight, throwing on a sports coat, getting dressed, walking into the arena, back in the day at the MGM Grand or Mandalay Bay, walking in and just feeling the vibe of a big championship fight. It's just spectacular. And I think for a fight like this, tomorrow we got Jim Lampley on. Remember, tomorrow I'm at the great Grimaldi's. Jim will join us over the phone. We're confirmed tomorrow for Jim Lampley, one of the great broadcasters. And I hope you enjoy what we do here today. That's a Hall of Fame broadcaster. Jim Lampley's a Hall of Fame broadcaster. We had John Brankus on yesterday, the sports science guy. It's not Raider season. Man, I got to fill some spots here. So I'm trying to give you great interviews, people you're familiar with, things that are happening in Vegas, important things that are happening out there, and then give you an opportunity, as always, to call in on the Raider draft. You've had a couple of days to absorb the Raider draft, and we want to hear what you like about it, because I don't think the Raider fans are getting a lot of heat on the draft. I don't. But there's a lot of people popping off about the Chargers in Denver, because there's media members who are in the pocket of those guys. Now, I'm transparent. I am in the pocket of the Raiders. I'm not shying away from that. I work for the team. People want me to go with a pitchfork and fire the coach, so I'd lose my job. I work for the Raiders, okay? I've worked for them going on 26 season. I want the Raiders to win. And when I go on all these other radio shows, I'm a knucklehead screaming about how great the Raiders are. So I know some people say, JT, you're a hypocrite. You're ripping on a radio host who says that the Chargers are going to be the second team. No, I'm ripping on people who don't give the Raiders respect. That's it. I give Jim Harbaugh respect. Sean Payton's won a Super Bowl. But all the latest garbage about how good Denver is, Denver stinks. They're terrible. We got to sweep them. I'll predict the sweep this year. I'll tell you that ahead when the schedule comes out. No matter when the Raiders play Denver, I promise you I'll predict the sweep. And if I'm wrong, you know where to find me. With the Chargers, I think we'll get one out of two. That's been a tough matchup, but for whatever reason, we beat them. And we split with them. Kansas City, we just beat them. But the Raiders don't get credit with the national media for any of that. The 63 points without completing a pass after the first quarter, beating Kansas City. You know how impossible it is to beat Kansas City without completing a pass in the second, third, and fourth quarter? The Raiders did that. And I just think the Raiders with this draft got better. And before Al came on, as I finished my point, the main reason they got better was Christian Wilkins. Let me make that point very clear to everybody. We have a defensive tackle who's not Aaron Donald. And he might not be Chris Jones, but he's close. He's in the ballpark of being elite. I don't know what he's going to do with Max Crosby, but there's a chance that he might be so great with Max Crosby, the entire season is dominated by two players, Max Crosby and Christian Wilkins. Everybody else is going to contribute. You know what I'm saying? But we got two guys that can train wreck a game that the Raiders aren't expected to win. So the Raiders could be going on the road to Tampa, or they could be playing in L.A. against the Rams. And, you know, we preview the game. The bookmakers say the Rams are a 1.5-point favorite or three. And all of a sudden, Christian Wilkins comes into the game with a sack and a forced fumble, and Max Crosby has three sacks, and the game's a blowout. That's what intrigues me about this upcoming season for the Silver and Black. The two guys on defense, without Tyree Wilson and Malcolm Kuntz, those two guys can blow up everything and play at an elite level. And if they can do that, then it changes everything. So when the people say the Chargers are the second best team, this is the third best team. No, no, no. Look at what just happened in some of these games. Thanks to Al Bernstein. Coming up, we have Bill Williamson in about 15 minutes and an open line for you. I'm not giving you an ice cream cone to call in on the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm appalled that I don't have five Golden Knight fans on right now. I'm appalled. Give me a hockey fan today or a tweet to at least read so we can pretend we're a hockey town with the Stanley Cup champs on the verge of elimination. We're brought to you by PTs. They fuel the monologue. Best happy hour in town, 5 to 7, midnight to 2, and they're proud partners with the Golden Knights.
At the time when I was there, I hadn't necessarily seen enough to say this is for sure what I should do. But in hindsight, like we talked about, I mean, the kid is a baller, man. I'm so happy for him, and you know, I haven't really had a chance to truly sit down and talk with him, but I want to tell him at some point, like, you know, I definitely don't regret changing, but I'm super proud of what you've done. And, you know, if there was a way I could pull you over here and, you know, and drag you with me like that, you know, that would have been cool too. Cause, you know, obviously we saw what he did at the end of the year, but I don't regret what I did. But at the same time, it's definitely, you look back on it, you're like, damn, that boy got a ball. Right,
could he be the next one?
Could he be? I mean, I think he is. I think he's shown that. Yeah. And he's starting to come into his own. I mean, you can see the way he's talking in front of the media and everything. It's just like a whole different person than what I saw when I was there. Yeah. And that comes with experience.
All right, that's Davante Adams as he was on Max's podcast here. JT, back with you as we continue. I don't do a lot of Davante on this show. I've only met Davante once. Davante does certain media. He's unbelievable. I'm a massive fan of Davante Adams. I think he is, you know, arguably the most important player on the team. It's a team. Everybody's important. But for Davante, talking about the success of Jordan Love played really well. And I've been covering Jordan Love's entire career, hosted a national show, and no one talked about Jordan Love until he got a chance to play. The Raiders beat Jordan Love at Allegiant Stadium last season. He didn't look great in that game. A couple of guys were hurt in that game. A couple of Raiders were hurt. And all of a sudden, they think they're stable at quarterback. What fascinates me is a lot of people around the league do not believe the Raiders are stable at quarterback. I mean, that's a really big slap in the face. Because Aiden O'Connell's a fourth-round pick. He's not a seventh-round pick. He's not Mr. Irrelevant. Look what Brock Purdy did. He was the last player selected in the draft. Aiden O'Connell was a fourth-round player and played pretty well. He was not elite. He didn't play great. He played pretty well in certain spots throughout the season. I know that the more I look into Gardner Minshew, Gardner Minshew was a good player. Is he better than Jordan Love? I don't think he has a higher ceiling than Jordan Love. He's got bigger stats. He's been playing longer in the league. He's made bigger throws. He's won bigger games. But Jordan Love went in and beat the Cowboys in Dallas, and that was pretty important. That was pretty important for him, and now everybody's backed off him. They were trashing him. You look at Jalen Hurts, you look around the league at some of the other quarterbacks who are in this league. They're young. This is a young quarterback league, everybody. Joe Burrow. A Gardner Minshew's 27 going on 28. That is young. Gardner Minshew's a lot younger than Rich Gannon when Rich Gannon came to the Raiders. I've been hanging out with Rich a lot lately. He was there at the draft party. He was at the Biletnikoff event. Rich and I have been talking a lot of football, basically me listening to him talk football. And he likes Gardner Minshew. So you're either in one or two camps as a Raider fan. And I'm trying to vet you and figure out which Raider fan you are. Are you a Raider fan as we sit here on May 2nd, 2024, that is comfortable with the quarterback situation? You're okay with it. You'd like it to be a little bit better. Or are you going through trauma right now because the Raiders didn't get Michael Penix Jr. and they weren't able to get Jaden Daniels? Because I'm sensing both. I'm sensing there are Raider fans that are walking around going, oh my God, we don't have a quarterback. What are you talking about? You don't have a quarterback. You got Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew. There's depth at that position. Gus Bradley's son being signed to come in. There's going to be some practice squad quarterbacks out there too, but we're concentrating on the quarterback battle. I'm expecting this to be a quarterback battle because we need that. Throughout my tenureship with the team, especially during the Derek Carr era, you know, Derek Carr, when he played in the preseason, had no one coming for his job. And Derek didn't have to play much in the preseason. And practice had to be kind of perfect for Derek. Derek really cared about the ball not hitting the ground in practice, having clean practices, and all of that. Derek was a competitor. He worked hard. First one in, last guy to leave, threw the ball in the park after practice. We got great things to say about Derek Carr. But he didn't have much of a fight. He didn't have to look over his shoulder much. Well, he might have to now with Spencer Rattler in New Orleans and what's happening there. But here, I'm embracing this competition. And there's going to be a level of how deep this conversation goes. Do you think it'll be a quarterback battle? Or do you think it's going to be, you know, two guys, Aiden O'Connell's the front runner. Gardner Minshew's going to have to do more than Aiden O'Connell in the preseason to earn the job. That's really the intriguing topic, isn't it? Who has to do more in the preseason? The veteran in Gardner Minshew, who's won more games than Aiden, or Aiden, the guy who finished the last season and helped Antonio Pierce get his job? I don't know the answer to that, nor do I think I will. Nor do I think Vic Tafer or Paul Gutierrez or Q None of us are going to know the answer to that. No one's going to tell us who the quarterback is in May. These guys are going to have to battle it out, and they're going to have to battle it out in a big way. But for Raider fans who are out there now, as we're coming off the draft, the team got better. They got noticeably better because Gardner Minshew was added along with Christian Wilkins and Michael Gallup. Those are three good players. And then they had a good draft. They got an offensive guard who's a stud. They got maybe the best player offensive weapon in the entire draft who wasn't a quarterback in Brock Bowers. Those are five new players I just added, five, who weren't in the building a couple of months ago. And, you know, okay, you lose Amik Robertson and people are freaking out. Oh, the Raiders lost Jermaine Illuminor? Give me a break. Those players were good players. They contributed to the Raiders. The Raiders have better players now than the players I mentioned there. The cornerback's going to be interesting because the Raiders took a cornerback in the fourth and seventh round. In the fourth and seventh round, will they play? I don't know. The seventh round pick probably makes the team on special teams or practice squad. And the fourth round quarterback is a lot like the cornerback we brought in last year in the fourth round, competing for a slot opposite Jack Jones and Nate Hobbs playing in the slot. So there's only a couple holes left here or a couple of things that need to be tightened up because I thought Tom Telesco did a pretty good job in the draft. 702-365-9200 as we continue on. The fight is my priority in the Golden Knights, more so than the Raiders the next 2 days. I repeat, the Canelo fight and the Golden Knights staving off elimination as we are brought to you by Resorts World, home of Doghouse Saloon.
The best part was George Atkinson was sitting right across from me, and he was telling some great stories when he came out of college and about the process, the draft process, when he went through it. That was probably the best part of today. So that was it was good. It was fun. It's there's a lot of anxiety going in. You don't know how it's going to break, but if you prepare well enough, we got good people in there. It's not like I'm sitting there by myself. I got a big staff of people to bounce ideas off of. All the scouts were in there, but it was kind of cool having George in there. Make sure we had to have some true Raiders in there. Get some Raider history in that draft room.
All right, that's Tom Telesco, and you know what George Atkinson means to me, and I've been with George a lot over the last couple of days, and I love when a new GM or someone in a new regime understands the greatness of the Raider alumni and embraces them. And Tom Telesco, very sincere there. JT, back with you as we continue on, brought to you by the M Resort Spahn Casino, the official hotel of the Silver and Black. Bill Williamson, kind enough to join us from silverandblackpride.com. Bill, before we get into your individual breakdowns overall, first time talking to you since the draft. Any surprises other than Brock Bowers? Where you think the Raiders did a decent job? What grade did you give them?
You know, I mean, I guess I give them a B plus. I thought it was a strong draft. I don't think you can quibble with it too much. My opinion and everybody's opinion in the draft really doesn't matter. It's just opinions right now. But let's face it, in recent history of the Raiders, there's been some draft picks where at least I went, oh boy, when they made the pick, and they turned out to be, oh boy, picks. And I made that point on Thursday night, is that there's no doubt that Bowers was a surprise pick. Mm-hmm. Very much so. But it wasn't a bad surprise. You know, it wasn't Farrell, Leatherwood, Arnett surprises. Those were out-and-out reaches, and at least I had a feeling that none of them were going to work when it happened, and none of them worked. This was kind of the opposite surprise, unexpected. This is a good player falling to him, and maybe it was a luxury pick. You know, I did about 2 weeks before a draft, I did a pro-con on Bowers, and I'm very happy about that because I didn't see a lot of people connecting Bowers to the Raiders. And the pros was, hey, good player. You add to the offense, you get another weapon. You take pressure off the quarterback. The cons was, well, maybe it was a luxury and maybe a playoff team doesn't need a luxury pick. But the point is, they made the pick. He's coming to the Raiders. And I think at the end of the day, fans are going to cheer this guy a lot.
Yeah, Bill, I quoted you on that. It wasn't a bad surprise. It's kind of a good surprise in regards to getting one of the best offensive players to ever play college football, period. Not at Georgia, ever in the history of the sport. And that's a luxury, I think. That's a luxury for the Raiders. But, you know, Bill, I keep saying this because I don't know Luke Getsy well. I just met him. They got to figure out this 12 personnel and two tight end set quickly. Because Michael Mayer at times last year disappeared because they got him the ball and then they just couldn't get him the ball again. They had a lot of three and outs that we reported on. They just never got him going to the likeness that I wanted to see. That can't happen again this year. Both these tight ends need to have big years if the Raiders are going to compete for the playoffs. Do you think they'll figure it out early in the season?
Well, it's certainly a priority. It's something that they have to be working on right now. You know, like a lot of, you know, smart draft analysts are going, okay, unexpected, but they got a really good player. Now it's up to the coaches, and they're exactly right. It's up to those coaches who not necessarily were expecting that, you know, going into that day, that they're going to have to adjust their playbook. But they do. You know, I think the reality is there's one ball. Team has the ball for about 30 minutes a game. Something's going to suffer. And that's just reality. That's not a shot. Whether it's Myers, whether it's Mayer, maybe even Adams, somebody's production is going to suffer if Bowers has a big role in this offense. And that's just the way it goes. You know, a lot of people say, hey, these guys could be, when we think of the two tight ends, we think of, you know, their all-time success is Gronk and Hernandez, right? I don't know if expect that, that this is going to be the all-time success and they're both going to be ultra productive. But we'll see. And that's a good problem to have. And, you know, maybe Mayer doesn't have the Raider career we thought. Maybe Bowers doesn't. Who knows? But this is what's there, and it's an opportunity.
Bill Williamson, silverandblackpride.com, SB Nation. His story that he just put out, Jackson Powers Johnson brings mean streak to the Las Vegas Raiders. Tell me about putting this column together and what you learned about him. I saw him play. I watched Oregon play enough, but I never knew who he was as a casual college football fan. Now I see the tape. He just jumps off the tape. How great of a player can he be?
Yeah, I think he can be a really solid football player. And, you know, I mean, look at interior offensive linemen who go on to have great careers are picked in the second round or late first round or third round. So don't think that there's going to be a limitation here to his production just because he was picked at number 44. He's got a mean streak. I talked to his position coach yesterday for that story you just mentioned, and I appreciate that. And he goes, hey, look, it's pretty much a perfect fit for that Raider history, you know, a violent play at that position. And he says, I think it's going to be a really good situation for him that he's coming in at guard because he might have to do less thinking and come in and play guard, you know, because center is such a more complicated position. And he said he's just a guy that makes his presence felt every day. And he's a very smart, heady guy, very mature. He's only 21 as well. And he's already got a very powerful build. So, yeah, I think the Raiders should be excited about him as well. And I think we may see some, you know, some social media pancake plays from this guy coming up pretty soon early in the season.
Hey, Bill, as we wrap it up with the relief the Raiders are going to get in the cap with Jimmy Garoppolo coming up after June, I still think they need – look, they drafted a right tackle with the third pick of their draft. So I think they checked that box. I don't know how great a young player is going to be behind Thayer Mumford, but – corner, they had to wait for the fourth and seventh round. Do you believe they'll be able to get a corner still in free agency or on cut down day, a veteran to put out there, or are they going to go with Ja'Korian again? What do you think happens with the depth of Jack Jones, Nate Hobbs in the slot, and what the Raiders tipped their hand in the draft on what they wanted to do? Because they didn't go early and get a cornerback, and I don't blame them for that because Brock Bowers was available, and that was a great pick.
Yeah, I think that probably the top position where you look at the depth chart and say, yeah, they probably need a starter. I don't know if they need to wait to June 1st. I mean, there's some corners out there. Gilmore's out there. Howard's out there. Adore Jackson's out there. Steven Nelson, who I like, is an underrated player. He's out there. That's four corners. And Howard and Jackson both played with Patrick Graham in other cities. So there's some connections there. Are those going to be elite players at this point? No, you're not going to get an elite free agent at this point. But, yeah, I think they can fill a need. I think June 1 release is going to be more like, okay, let's see if we can sign Kuz, see if we want to sign Diablo, Morig, Hobbs, those types of players.
Excellent, Bill. Great work as always. Your draft coverage was exceptional. We'll tweet out more of it. Thanks so much for coming on.
Anytime, JT. Thanks. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bill Williamson. I just tweeted it out at JT the Brick on Twitter. Read his column on the big offensive lineman that just came in out of Oregon. Read it. I read it. It's fantastic. You'll see why the Raiders took him at number 44, and I'm considering him a starter. That's my opinion. I might not be right. I think I'm right. He'll start on the offensive line. He'll be a nasty Raider, and he's embracing the Raiders. You got to get out of this draft with three starters. I said it. I think they got two in the first two picks. We'll see what happens with the swing tackle overall at the third pick, and maybe the corners will pop. Who knows? And Eichenberg at linebacker can play. I'm not saying he can start, but he can potentially start and get out there in some type of package, especially a run-stuffing package on third down. I like what the Raiders did in the draft. The back end of the draft is getting a little bit of light criticism from the haters out there. Bill gave him a B+. I'd give the Raiders a B+. And with Bowers, that's all I care about. The first pick of Brock Bowers gives me something as a season ticket holder to get super excited about. I want to see something great from Luke Getsy and the offensive coordinator and what they're going to do here. I want this camp to be very successful in getting the young tight ends up to speed so it doesn't take 2 months. I'll be pounding that topic home all summer long. 1 hour flew by. Howard Balzer and Levi Edwards will join us next hour. I've been shut out. I hope not to be shut out next hour. 702-365-9200. I'm ready to roll. Let's go. Let's get a Golden Knight fan. Got to win that game. Must win.